Major Melon, brought to you by Upjohn, GlaxoSmithKline.
What's Upjohn?
It's a pharmaceutical company from the 90s.
Welcome to Namely 90s, the podcast that takes you back to the time before smartphones, Google, and Y2K. Join your hosts as they relive the pop culture that shaped a generation and the parts that many people wish they could forget. Listen in to the conversation about how the decade defined those who spent their childhood there and how it shaped them as adults. So, turn down the grunge and dial up the internet. Let's get started. It's time for Namely 90s.
That's right, you're listening to Namely 90s. My name's Andrew, and over there is Brandon.
That's me.
You can find us online at namely90s.com or on Instagram at namely90s with a 90s. You can also find this show on YouTube every Monday at youtube.com/@namely90s. And if you'd like to support the show, go over to patreon.com/namely90s, also with a 90s, and get signed up for one of our support levels. All right. Well, we're back. I'm at a different angle yet again.
We're back. Oh, yeah. Those of you who follow our YouTube can see Andrew's gradual move across the screen.
Yeah, I'm just gradually rotating. I'm doing a 360 just over the course of five episodes, in case you were wondering.
Yeah. Although I have to say, it's somehow at further back than your previous camera. So now... you're not just like a giant head in frame.
Yeah. I mean, I do have a giant head, but you can see the fine Sequoia redwood here behind me, which is literally just a vinyl print of wood.
Well, I can't see the whole thing, so.
Yeah, I know. The problem is sometimes I go on Zoom calls with this thing and they're like, where are you? Are you like in your barn? And I'm like, no.
Yes, clearly.
My 60 square foot barn shed.
And then you just put this picture up again, and it's the picture of the Unabomber shed in Montana.
My goal for the next place is to have a nice room for my recording situation, hopefully, and then just have like nice things behind it that just are a good backdrop.
Yeah, like most YouTubers and streamers have these days. Comma, so you're getting a 6-bedroom house then?
Probably at least four.
Five bedrooms, well, with an office.
Two of the kids share.
For now.
Yeah, we'll see. They don't need to sleep. They can just stand on the porch. No, just kidding.
Well, I guess you wouldn't need, you wouldn't need six, you need five. Because clearly you have a wife that sleeps in your own room.
Spilled beans on my shirt again today. Do you spill food on your shirt every time you eat?
I plead the fifth.
I spill food on my shirt every time I eat, and it's always greasy food, so I always have grease stains on my shirt, which never come out despite everything that I try. And once again today, I was trying to eat refried beans on a chip at a Mexican place and just immediately dropped it onto my shirt.
Oh, I only do it when I'm like at home and like eating on the couch. Like it's only then does like I'm able to drop it onto myself.
I'm just a disaster when I eat.
Apparently. Although, you know, one out of four times that'll happen to me. It's either the salsa that's not like on the chip all the way and you're like raising it, or like the soy sauce that's like you didn't shake off, so it's like trying to attack you.
This is why I wear $8 t-shirts from Target, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
I just, it's
white, a white t-shirt at home. So I could just Picasso it with my,
and then bleach it.
Yeah.
Or
buy new ones.
Well, remember when, I don't know, do you still sort your laundry by the way?
I do, even though I have colds and, most of my underwear are black instead of white.
I just joke about it. Like, millennials don't sort their laundry.
Yeah.
There's two types of laundry when you're a millennial. Dirty and clean. That's how I sort my laundry. And if that.
I'll just do clothes and I'll do like undergarments and such. Just because I like to put that on a warmer, like warm instead of just cold, even though you're supposed to use cold now for everything.
And I will say that, well, that doesn't seem like it gets it very clean, but I always like put my dryer on extra low and it still bakes the clothes and just shrinks them immediately, which wouldn't be a problem if I was shrinking, but unfortunately I'm going the other direction.
low seems to work for me, but so the problem is I think my dryer's like automatic sensor is broken, so I now just have to put it on low, but the low cycle is only 30 minutes, so I have to go I have to do 230 minutes if it's like a lot of clothes, but then if it's not a lot of clothes and you do two, things start to shrink. It's not an exact science.
This is compelling.
I know podcasting. This is our worst intro in like a month.
I'm just trying to go with random topic. It's like a really bad stand-up set. This is how every episode of Seinfeld starts.
I mean, we've done things since last week, I assume.
The problem
is how every episode
starts. The moment we start talking, I forget everything that's happened in the last week.
That's fair.
Why is that?
Performance anxiety? I don't know.
Flaccid. Oh, no, that's a different type.
Flaccid thoughts. Yes. I don't know. One of the things that I would have talked about today, you're covering for the deep dive topic. So,
you're welcome.
Yeah. Cause I literally just downloaded the new album right before we started and started listening to some songs.
Doesn't it come out tomorrow?
It comes out on Friday, which is already
yesterday, 2 days, 3 days ago.
No, it's today in 2 or 3 hours. So East Coast time.
Yeah,
things drop on East Coast time, like the new Super Mario. Sorry.
I was going to say, it's my birthday present this year.
Ah, yes. Happy birthday on the East Coast, I guess.
Yeah. Happy tomorrow. Happy day after my birthday in Australia. No, not quite.
Yeah, the new Super Mario game came out today as well. Super Mario Wonder. And And I gotta go watch the new Loki episode. Man, Thursdays are busy
for
me, I guess.
This Thursday is busy for you, I guess.
Yeah, yes. No, it's I don't know, man. It's weirdly been a long week without being like a long week, you know? Like,
yeah, it's hard because I was traveling again. And I never really. It's hard to sense the passage of time.
Yeah, and you don't stay long enough to get acclimated to the new time shifts and stuff, right?
Well, I was in Western Washington, so I don't really go anywhere else. I mean, I might go to Tucson in November or something, that's about it. But I'm pretty much just in Western Washington at times. So, yeah, I went to Seattle and was looking at some venues in the Ballard area, and there really are just tents everywhere.
A tent, like
just not tent cities, just tents, like. On the grassy median between like a chain link fence and like there's the sidewalk, the chain link fence, and then kind of that strip of grass before the street. There's just like tents there. Okay. There's dilapidated motorhomes. It was interesting. It was an experience.
Go to the Fremont Troll and it's just now a housing community.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's interesting. So I was in Seattle a couple times and it's, you know, it's Seattle. I went through the tunnel, the new tunnel. Have you been through the new tunnel?
I think, no, because don't you have to pay to go through it?
It's like $1.50.
Yeah, but I have a rental and it's like charged to your car, right?
Yeah, it'd be $3.50 then, but I did it because I was trying to like come north from the south end, obviously, and get into the Inner Bay area. And it was like, you could go up I-5 and take the Mercer Street exit. And I was like, no one would do that, especially because it was like cracking opening night. So I just took the tunnel. It was great.
Yeah.
Which dropped me off right in front of the arena. I remembered after I came out, I was like, it's fine. It wasn't that bad. But we went to dinner and the Kraken were playing that night and we ended up taking an Uber XL because parking was $35. The place we were going to eat was like near Seattle Center.
How much was the Uber though?
$35, but there were like six of us. So if we had all went down there and parked, you know, it would have been asinine. But it was it was interesting. I haven't stepped on a Seattle street in 10 plus years. I really haven't.
I don't know.
Maybe due to a baseball game like 9 years ago or something.
Let's say 10 months ago for me. Or I guess 11 months. Yeah, 10 months ago because Christmas. As in the International District.
Oh, I didn't know if you went there to have your nuts cracked. The Nutcracker or...
Oh, yeah. We also went to the... Did we go? It was not... Yeah, we went to the new Nutcracker last year. Nice. So
You got hepatitis walking into the Seattle Ballet or whatever.
Oh, it just wasn't as good because it's not the Maurice Sendak sets and they've like... It seemed like it was a different... It feels like they shortened it because there's less going on.
Do they de-Russianify it?
I think I don't remember the Russian dancers, but I do remember the offensive Asian one.
Oh gosh. Wow. Well, I'll be spending a lot more time on those Seattle streets soon enough.
Getting mugged and killed.
Although the place that I'm going to be working doesn't have many tents. And they also did cancel the Chick-fil-A they were building, which is fine.
Oh, good. How would they get to Inner Bay?
I don't know. They're going to build one.
No, not Chick-fil-A. I don't know.
They could ride the rails. We're next to the National Guard Armory. Like, we share a fence with them. I'm not sure what good that does us.
More police presence?
They just shoot tear gas at people.
That reminds me. That's what happened. I finally finished Frasier. It took me a month to finish Cheers and Frasier. And there was a joke about Martin where he was like, you know, back in my day, we would just throw tear gas at those protesters. I was like, that's a relevant joke.
Kind of do.
Well, that was like coming off of WTO.
Right.
When they said
some themes just continually reoccur, you know, you think it's going to go away and it just doesn't.
We've really talked about nothing for 12 minutes.
Hey, that's podcasting.
Yeah,
let's talk about a murder. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm surprised you haven't done a murder yet, because that was one of the things that you really have wanted to do with this deep dive format. I might do one.
Well, the problem is, like, the one murder that you would do, a little controversial. OJ.
The one murder that you would do, I would do JonBenet Ramsey.
Yeah, that's a good one. Did we solve that yet?
Nope.
We kind of did Tupac a little bit. Slightly.
Yeah, well, I mean, we didn't do a deep dive yet.
True. All right. Well, we should do this, huh?
I mean, we could keep waffling on. Turning into gas and danger.
I actually have a lot. Oh, shots fired.
they would be the first to say that.
But not how the U.S. fires shots, which is into an elementary school. Anyway, I should start because I have a lot to read from Wikipedia.
I'm sorry. And I will be adding flavor.
Yes, you will. I wrote jokes.
Stole my topic.
I wrote jokes for the first half, and then I just started copying and pasting stuff. All right. Well, let's do this. We're doing a deep dive this week in honor of the release of their ninth studio album. In honor of the release of their ninth studio album, One More Time, which came out on October 20th, and marking the return of Tom DeLonge, and therefore reuniting Blink-182's best-known lineup for the first time in 7 years. We're going to take a deep dive into a 90s and early 2000s music sensation, Blink 182.
Sorry, just one quick thing before you start. Their last studio album was called Nine.
And it was their eighth studio album.
How did I not know that?
It was a total mind F. I was like, what? What?
Yeah.
I think there was one album before that technically wasn't considered one of their studio albums. So maybe it came from that. It was called
Buddha.
There was even one more before that.
No, it was Buddha. Buddha was before Cheshire Cat.
There was even one more before that. according to my research.
The demo one?
Yeah, I think so. I think who's the one on the Magic School Bus is always like, according to my calculations, is that Dorothy Ann?
Was that Dorothy Ann?
I think so.
Yeah, because Arnold was the Freddy Pan. No.
So I think we should open up by saying it's no secret, at least to you, that I have not been a big fan of Blink-182's music.
Which is why I'm surprised he's doing this one.
Yeah, but I mean, it was very relevant and they're obviously well-liked. Recently, I've actually, as I say, every episode I've been listening to Old Loveline, and I just listened to an episode from 1998 where they played their song Josie, and it literally sounded like toddlers banging on pots and pans and recording it with a talk boy. And in parentheses, it says insert F-boy joke.
Sorry, okay. That reminded me. I mean, yeah. So I've been listening to their discography to prep myself for the new album. And Cheshire Cat is a rougher album.
Yeah.
But also, wasn't that off their second album?
Yeah. Which was entitled
Dude Ranch.
I mean, granted, I think I said this to you before. I was listening to an amateur recording on a cassette of a radio broadcast from 26 years ago.
Yep.
That then was converted into a bad MP3. So, and then my next line is, says in-depth discussion of why I dislike them and why Brandon like parenthesis S parenthesis D parenthesis question mark them. You liked or still likes them.
I love Blink-182.
Love.
Yeah. Well, did you do your in-depth discussion about why you don't like them, or do I go first?
I can't quite put my finger on it. I think, tell me why you like them so that I can disagree with you.
Okay. As the story goes, do you remember the Disney Channel? Was it Disney Channel original movie? Yeah. Disney Channel original movie, Brink.
Oh yeah. Brink. Let's blade. Whatever. Let's blade.
We're soul skaters. Team Pup and Suds. That came out around the time that Blink-182 like released All the Small Things off of their third studio album, Enema of the State, in 99. And they did a concert on Disney Channel with Blink-182, which is weird because they were known for being like childish with their lyrics and such. And they showed the movie Brink, and then it was Blink, and they called it Blink-182.
It's just the worst thing. Wow.
So like that was the summer before sixth grade. And in our sixth grade science class, I won some sort of contest where the teacher was supposed to buy me a CD, any CD of my choice. Huh. And I was like, well, I want the Blink-182 album. And like,
oh, no.
I didn't know it was Blink or Brink at the time. And it was Enema of the State. And so she's like, well, it has explicit content, so I have to ask
for a take off your pants and jacket.
I know, right? Which came out the summer after. I was like, I asked my parents, I'm like, I want a CD, but the teacher won't get it for me unless I have permission to get it. And they're like, I don't know if you should get a CD with explicit content on it. And I was like, dang it.
Darn it. Gee Willikers,
parents. But yeah, so naturally I did what any normal kid our age did at the time and went on Napster and downloaded that entire album.
You not only listened to explicit content, but you stole it.
Yes.
Allegedly. If you hadn't gotten the CD, you could have downloaded it.
Yes.
Statute of limitations. It's fine.
Is it? Because I've purchased it at some point afterwards. Either way. And then a couple of songs off of Dude Ranch, like Josie and Maybe Josie was the only one. No, Damn It and Josie were like two other singles that I got from Dude Ranch and or Cheshire Cat. And yeah, like I can as I was listening to Blink again, Enema of the State, it's the album that I ripped off of Napster. And it's like cuts off at certain parts, but I can sing every single lyric to every single song.
Well, that's good because we have a little BuzzFeed quiz later.
Oh, excellent. But sorry, I know I'm taking a lot of time here, but the reason why I love it is because they ushered in that new era of pop punk, which devolved by the mid 2000s. But it started with like them. It was Green Day, like MXPX had that sound.
MXPX did have that sound. They used it as bumper music for Loveline. And I'm like, is this Blink 182? And I had to look it up and it was in fact MXPX.
And that defined our childhood, like, rock.
Yeah, I think the overwhelming immaturity of the the act just didn't work for me.
See that. Yeah.
And the other thing is I was sort of still, well, because of my brother was into more like actual punk versus pop punk. Yep. So like for me, you know, I was a little bit, I don't know exactly when I got into it, like I get into Bad Religion, right? And that's a very smart and more punkish sort of feel, but like not anyway, but it was just like the opposite, the polar opposite of Blink 182. And the other thing is I think some people I just didn't like very much in school liked Blink 182 a lot. And as you know,
one of our best friends,
anything popular, I can't hate, like. Yeah. So yeah, I mean,
just to circle back to your smart comment, Take Off Your Pants and Jacket and earlier, very immature, even though there's also other themes that are mixed in with Enema and Take Off Your Pants. But once you hit that self-titled album that came out in 2003, right before we hit high school, or no, I think we were in high school, freshman year.
Yeah.
That's when they really, they pulled the maturity in back into it. And
then it all went to hell.
Really solidified its sound. And yes.
I mean, credit where credit's due. Very popular band. And that's why we're talking about them today.
Yes. A year after they do their reunion tour.
So anyway, for those of you that don't know, Blink 182 is an American rock band that formed in 1992 is it Poway or Poway? I don't really know.
Poway,
California. Poway, California is in the north of San Diego County and is best known for its exceptionally fine peaches and vineyards. Other than that, according to the internet, it's a small town of around 50,000 with access to a bunch of freeways to desirable destinations, such as the rest of California.
I mean, so I had a roommate that went to Poway High School where they formed Blink 182.
But literally, like when I was reading about it, it was like it has excellent freeway access to like several places in California and Mexico. I'm like, so you're basically saying it has a lot of ways to go anywhere but there, which is what you probably want.
It's like the last stop before San Diego on I-5? It's off I-5.
I think it's off I-5 because I did that recently.
Like, and that's like the gateway to
hell.
No, the sucky wine country out there too.
It has exceptionally fine peaches. It sounds like something you say it when you're in the South. Exceptionally fine peaches. Going back to Blink 182, their straightforward approach and simple arrangements, which helped initiate pop punk's second mainstream rise, made them popular among generations of listeners. Worldwide, the group has sold 50 million albums and moved 15.3 million copies in the U.S. Why does that sound like a small number? I don't know why. It may not be, but it sounds like a small number.
50 million albums?
15.3 in the U.S. specifically.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's not. I don't really know what like good benchmarks are for U.S. bands.
Well, it's weird because like I looked up Bad Religion's like.
Oh, Bad Religion is not popular. Sale.
Yeah. And they've sold 5 million.
I mean, that's not bad, but they're not a super popular band.
Right. But you would think there'd be more than that.
Did you look up Taylor Swift yet?
I did not.
How many records has Taylor Swift sold? Yeah, Taylor Swift was in Blink 182. No, I'm just kidding.
114 million albums worldwide.
37.3 million in the United States. Anyway, so.
But again, she also has twice to three times the amount of albums they have.
Aren't we due for a third punk pop mainstream rise? Although some people already think there is one and reference things like Machine Gun Kelly and Avril Lavigne, to which I responded, just no.
I mean, no. Like Avril Lavigne's current iteration is like Panic at the Disco.
She's also having her second mainstream pop punk rise herself.
So. Yeah.
On an unrelated note, I was flipping through radio stations when I was in Seattle, and I was looking for the Kraken game, and I couldn't find it. And I looked it up, and it was on 93.3. Cube 93.3 is now a sports talk station.
Well, they turned into, weren't they a Jack FM at one point?
I think so. After being like the R&B hip hop station for the for Seattle
ever. The R&B station that I grew up on.
Now it is sports talk, in case you're wondering.
That's crazy that they've leached into the
FM. Reason I couldn't find it is because every time I like scanned to 93.3, I would just hit next. I'm like, oh, this is the rap station. And that's basically what my mind said.
Well, it hasn't been Cube for over a decade.
I know that, but I haven't lived. Well, I did live over there, but let's be honest. Look at me. I didn't listen to it. I mean, not regularly. Like when I was younger, I did, but
yeah,
I don't really listen to the radio. I listen to podcasts and Spotify.
One more thing for why I like Blink is because like you said, there's a lot of immaturity in the lyrics, but there are like some songs like Anthem Part 1 and 2 that are like angsty teen BS. And that, yeah, there was a lot of angst going on in those those albums, you know.
All right, I'm gonna try to power through here because it's a lot.
Go for it.
I mean, I tried to boil it down, but a lot of it was fairly important to understand. So let's talk about how the band formed in their early years.
Okay.
If I pronounce things wrong, let me know because I'm not from California. Guitarist Tom DeLonge was expelled from Poway High School for being drunk at a basketball game. Who hasn't been? And was forced to attend another school, Rancho Bernardo High School, for one semester. There, he performed at a Battle of the Bands competition where he was introduced to drummer Scott Rayner, which apparently was the first drummer of Blink 182. Mm-hmm. He also befriended Kerry Key, who was interested in punk rock music. He was the Key at the time was dating Ann Hoppus, sister of bassist Mark Hoppus, who had recently moved from Ridgecrest, California, to work at a record store and attend college. I thought Kerry was a woman. I was very confused for a while. And then I figured out that can also be a man's name. Mm-hmm. Both Hoppus and DeLonge grew up listening to punk rock, and with both particularly enamored by the Descendants. They also Southern California at the time had a large punk population, whatever that means, in the early 1990s, probably aided by an active surfing, skating, and snowboarding scene. Surprised they didn't get into ska, because everyone was doing like ska back then. Mm-hmm. In contrast to East Coast punk music, the West Coast wave of groups typically introduced more melodic aspects. DeLonge said, New York is gloomy, dark, and cold. It makes different music. The Californian middle-class suburbs have nothing to be bummed about, said DeLonge, except that living in an arid, smoggy, scorched earth hellhole, which is what I editorialized in there. Anne introduced her brother Mark Hoppus to DeLonge on August 2nd, 1992. We were just 3 or 4?
Yep, we were, yeah.
The pair instantly connected and played for hours in DeLonge's garage, exchanging lyrics and co-writing songs, one of which became fan favorite Carousel, so good, in fact, I've never heard of it.
I've listened to it.
Okay.
It's a good one.
All right. Yeah. I mean,
it's a good early one.
That's good to know. Good to know. If I ever decide I need to do a deep dive into the music. Hoppus,
no, you would find it to be like Josie.
Yeah. Hoppus, hoping to impress DeLonge, fell from a lamppost in front of DeLonge's home and cracked his ankles, putting him on crutches for 3 weeks. The trio began to practice together in Rayner's bedroom, spending time writing music, seeing movies and punk concerts, and playing practical jokes. And then I just wrote, is this the origin of Jackass? Are they not the same guys?
It kind of feels like, well, because I mean, some of the Jackass guys actually lived out here, like from where I currently live.
Yeah. Meanwhile, on the East Coast, they're all sad and brooding.
Oh, I mean, half of the Jackass gang came from the New York skate scene, and then the others were from the California skate scene.
We should have an episode on here. That. The trio first operated under a variety of names, this is always fun, including Duct Tape and Figure Eight, until DeLong rechristened the band Blink. Hoppus's girlfriend at the time was annoyed by his constant attention to the band and demanded he make a choice between the band and her, which resulted in him leaving the band not long after its formation. I feel like usually if you give that ultimatum, you're the one they're leaving.
Yeah, but you know, when you're a teenager, you're like, yeah. The power of boners is stronger.
Shortly after, DeLong and Rayner borrowed a four-track recorder from a friend and collaborator Cam Jones, and were preparing to record a demo tape with Jones on bass. I almost said bass. Hoppus probably broke up with his girlfriend and returned to the band. Fly Swatter, a combination of original songs and punk covers, was recorded in Rayner's bedroom in May of 1993. That was what I was thinking of. That's not an album. So never mind. You're right. The band began booking shows and were on stage nearly every weekend, even at Elks Lodges and YMCA centers. Isn't everyone in Elks Lodge like 93 years old?
Yes.
They're talking like boners and masturbation and a bunch of old guys, which actually probably worked out.
Effing grandpas.
Yeah. DeLong constantly called clubs in San Diego asking for a spot to play, as well as local high schools, convincing them that Blink was a, quote, motivational band with a strong anti-drug message in hopes to play at an assembly or lunch. At the time, San Diego was hardly a hotbed of musical activity, but the band's popularity grew, as did punk rock concurrently in the mainstream. They found their way onto the bill as the opening band for acts performing at Soma, a coveted local all-ages venue. Quote, the biggest dreams we ever had when we started was to headline a show at Soma, Hoppus said later. Meanwhile, Hoppus's manager at the record store fronted the group money to properly record another demo, and the result was Buddha, 1994, which the members of the band viewed as the band's first legitimate release. And there you go. That's why nine is actually eight.
Yes, Buddha.
That
year, however. Oh.
No, not really. I lost my spot. Let's see. The heart of the local independent music scene was Cargo Records, which offered to sign the band on a trial basis. Hoppus was the only member to sign the contract, as DeLong was at work at the time and Rayner was still a minor. The band recorded the debut album Cheshire Cat, released in February of 95. And recorded it in just 3 days in Los Angeles, fueled by new songs and recordings, re-recordings of songs from previous demos. Eminem's, the band's first single, generated local airplay from 91X, and they also made a small music video, which probably did nothing. But this little bit of success drew some attention to the name Blink from Irish band named Blink. And unwilling to engage in a legal battle, they elected to change their name. And when the record label told them they had to change it finally, they just came up with a random number, which we all know as 182, and appended it to the band's name. I always wondered. I always thought that number was some sort of like secret Illuminati code or something like that. You know, Tom Hanks has to enter it into the decoder ring to open up the Bible or some random wacky thing like that. By March of 1996, the band began to accumulate a genuine buzz among major labels, resulting in a bidding war between Interscope, MCA, and Epitaph Records, which was founded by the guitarist of Bad Religion. MCA promised the group complete artistic freedom and ultimately signed the band, but Rayner held a greater affinity for Epitaph and began to feel half invested in the band when they chose MCA. Let's see here. The group, discouraged by Cargo's lack of distribution and faith in the group, held no qualms about signing to a major label, but were fiercely criticized in the punk community. Not a shock, but there's also really bad punk out there. Like, some of it's just too much, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It needs a little bit of pop to it to be listenable. don't you think?
Just gotta have that pop. Well, I agree, because
there's a little bit of melody to it. You know, a lot of the punk is just like extremely rapid drumming, and like there's not a discernible tune in there. Anyway, after nonstop touring, the trio began recording their follow-up LP, Dude Ranch, over a period of a month in late 1996. The record was released in the following June, and the band headed out on the 1997 Warped Tour. Damn it, the album's second single received heavy airplay on modern rock stations, such as KROQ Pasadena, Los Angeles.
K-Rock.
Dude Ranch shipped gold by 98, but an exhaustive touring schedule brought tensions among the trio. Rayner had been drinking heavily to offset personal issues, and he was fired by Tom DeLonge and Hoppus in mid-1998, despite agreeing to attend rehab and quit drinking. By the way, this makes me think of Rain or Shine, who Nathan Fillion played in The Weatherman in Modern Family, which I thought was hilarious. Wow. Travis Barker, who is not Travis Scott, in case you were wondering, and who I thought, when all that stuff was happening with Travis Scott, I thought they meant Travis Barker. I was very confused.
They do look similar, I think.
He was the drummer for tour mate The Aquabats, and I had no idea he was an Aquabats. Those guys are totally nuts.
Right.
Filled in for Rayner, learning the 20-song set list in 45 minutes before the first show. By July, he joined the band full-time, and later that year, the band entered the studio with producer Jerry Finn to begin work on their third studio album.
Oh, yeah.
More to come. But first, let's go to Brandon for the Namely 90s Minute.
Welcome back to Namely 90s Minute. Every week, we look back at a culturally relevant show, movie, or piece of pop culture that probably helps stoke the algorithm. This week, in honor of the Five Nights at Freddy's movie coming out, we're looking back at a progenitor of the found footage horror genre, The Blair Witch Project. The Blair Witch Project is a 1999 supernatural horror film starring three relative unknowns, one who played Mary Crawford in the 2002 Taken miniseries, not that Taken, a guy who played a man whose ex-wife killed their son in an episode of Law & Order, and Allison Pill's husband. The story is presented as found footage that three missing independent filmmakers left behind while shooting a documentary about the mythical Blair Witch. They travel to a small town in Maryland and interview the townsfolk about the myth. They learn about a hermit who used to live in the nearby woods and would abduct kids in pairs and kill them while forcing one to stand and stare in the corner of the room. In the woods, they encounter some fishermen who claim the woods are cursed and tells the tale of a young girl in the 1880s who went missing in the woods and returned 3 days later to tell the tale of an old lady whose feet never touched the ground. Finally, the group hike out to Coffin Rock, where some dudes were found ritualistically slaughtered in the 19th century. The next day, they find a graveyard with seven clarns, which are stacked stones, and Josh accidentally knocks one over. That night, while camping, they hear sticks snapping outside their tent, and in the morning try to hike back to their car but can't find it, so they camp for another night. Hearing the snapping sounds again. The next morning, they find three clarns around their campsite. Heather notices their map is missing, and Mike admits to have thrown it into the river out of frustration, which causes an argument between the three of them. They head south using a compass and come across a bunch of stick figures hung in the trees. That night, they hear more noises around the camp and children laughing. And then something shakes the tent, which causes them to freak out and hide in the woods until morning. When they return to camp, they find their stuff had been rifled through and Josh's stuff covered in slime. They eventually realize that they've been walking around in circles, and then Josh disappears the next morning. The following evening, they hear Josh's cries of agony in the woods, but don't go out to look for him because they're afraid it's the Blair Witch trying to lure them from the camp. The next day, Heather finds a talisman made with Josh's shirt, hair, and teeth, but decides not to tell Mike about it. She does the classic "I'm so scared" monologue and apologizes to all their families. That night, they hear Josh calling out to them, so they follow his voice to the abandoned Herman's house, which is littered with demonic symbols and children's bloody handprints. In the basement, Mike is assaulted by an unseen force and Heather yells. Her camera shows Mike in the corner, unresponsive, facing a wall, and then she is assaulted and drops her camera. And that's The Blair Witch Project in a Namely 90s Minute. More or less.
And now, back to the show. All right, let's dive back in. So with the release of the group's third album, Enema of the State, you heard that, folks, Enema of the State.
I wonder if that's a play on something.
It's a typo. In June 1999, Blink-182 is catapulted to stardom and became one of the biggest pop punks. Pop punk acts of the era. Good thing this thing has a built-in pop filter for plosives. Anyway, yeah. Three singles were released from the record. What's My Age Again, All the Small Things, and Adam's Song, which became major radio hits. All the Small Things became... Ooh, sorry, what?
I just gotta say, Adam's song is a giant bummer in the middle of that album, by the way. Yeah, you're
like, okay, well, I'm gonna...
I can't believe that was their third single, because it's a song about their friend killing themselves. Sorry.
Dial
KMSing.
Eight.
Unaliving.
What is it called? Dial 8...
886? 866? Down somewhere.
Well, we're bad at this. Well, 988. Dial 988, by the way.
If you're having thoughts of depression.
All the Small Things became a number one hit on the Modern Rock Tracks chart and also became a crossover hit, peaking at number 6 on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. Enema of the State was an enormous commercial success, although the band was criticized as synthesized, manufactured pop, only remotely resembling punk, and pigeonholed as a joke act due to their puerile slant on their singles and associated videos. I don't even know what that word means.
Juvenile.
Well, they're not
childish too. Yeah. To
following that success, as well as their first arena tour and cameo appearances in film and TV, such as American Pie, the band recorded their fourth album and comically titled Take Off Your Pants and Jacket, 2001. It became their first number one album in the US, Canada, and Germany, and spawned the singles The Rock Show, Stay Together for the Kids, and First Date. Recording sessions, though, were sometimes contentious as DeLonge strove for heavier sounding guitar riffs.
Fun story. I don't think I actually listened to the full Take Off Your Pants and Jacket until this listen through of their discography, because I remember our friend had it, and I remember downloading certain songs off of the album, hypothetically, including Rock Show, Stay Together for the Kids, First Date, and Anthem Part 2. But like, there were songs that I listened to, I'm like, I've never heard this before.
This is where it starts to go downhill. I think we've hit the pinnacle.
Pinnacle's the next album. It's a perfect album.
With time off from touring, DeLonge felt a desire to broaden his musical palette and channeled his chronic back pain and resulting frustration to Boxcar Racer, 2002, an LP that emulates his post-hardcore influences such as Fugazi and Refused. He invited Barker to record drums on the project in order to refrain from hiring a studio musician. Boxcar Racer rapidly evolved into a side project for the duo, launching the singles I Feel So and There Is, in addition to two national tours
throughout 2002. Feel so angry.
Though DeLonge claimed Hoppus was not intentionally left out, Hoppus felt betrayed, and in the event created great division within the trio for some time and was unresolved tension at the forefront of the band's later hiatus. So a hiatus happens.
Well,
ish.
No. Travis Barker went off to do the transplants as well.
Yeah, with, sort of.
Rancid.
I had to sort of cut some stuff out. But anyway, the band regrouped in 2003 to record its fifth studio album, infusing experimentalist elements into its usual pop punk sound.
The hiatus didn't happen until after this album.
Well, it said regrouped, so that means there was some sort of.
Well, they in the
article, Boxcar Racer
split
thing.
Off.
Blink 182, the untitled or self-titled album, was released in November 2003 through Geffen Records, which absorbed sister label MCA earlier that year. They traveled all around, including Japan and Australia, and they performed for the troops in the Persian Gulf during the first year of the Iraq War.
I think this is their best album.
Critics generally complimented the new, more mature direction taken for the album, and its lead singles, Feeling This and I Miss You, charted high, with the latter becoming the group's second number one hit on the Billboard Modern Rock Tracks chart. Fans, however, were split by the new direction. Mm-hmm. Intentions within the band, stemming from the grueling schedule and DeLonge's desire to spend more time with his family, started to become evident.
Why couldn't there just be like One Direction?
I mean, shoot, even the Jonas Brothers broke up, and they're brothers. Did Hanson ever break up and do a solo project?
I don't think they had the chance. Bop.
Okay. In February of 2005, Geffen Records issued a press statement announcing the band's indefinite hiatus. The band had broken up after members' arguments regarding their future and recording process. The band members did not speak from their breakup until 2008. That August, former producer and mentor Jerry Finn suffered a cerebral hemorrhage and died. Rip to the max.
Rip to the max. The
following month, Barker and collaborator Adam Goldstein were involved in a plane crash that killed four people, leaving them the two survivors. Barker sustained second and third degree burns and developed PTSD, and the accident resulted in 16 surgeries and multiple blood transfusions. Goldstein's injuries were less severe, but less than a year later, he died from a drug overdose. Barker's brush with death prompted him, DeLong, and Hoppus to meet that October, laying the grounds for the band's reunion.
You forgot the part about where DeLong made Angels and Airwaves.
That's not Blink-182, because I kind of like...
And the other ones did Plus 44.
The three opened up, discussing the events of the hiatus and their breakup, and DeLong was the first to approach the subject of reuniting. Hoppus remembered, quote, "I remember Tom said, 'So what do you guys think? Where are your heads at?' And I said, 'I think we should continue with what we've been doing for the past 17 years. I think we should get back on the road and back in the studio and do what we love doing.'" They still hated each other. For the first time in nearly 5 years, the band appeared on stage together as presenters at the February 2009 Grammy Awards and announced their reunion. The trio embarked on a reunion tour of North America from July to October of 2009. And then I just skip like, I don't know, 12 years.
They did Neighborhoods, then they broke up again.
Yeah, it got a little bit redundant, so I just stopped.
Yeah. So they did the next album, Neighborhoods. DeLong left to go back to Angels and Airwaves. Then they brought on Matt Skiba from Alkaline Trio. Did two albums with him, California and Nine. And then...
Which was eight, but...
Yeah, which was their eighth studio album, as we keep saying. And then I think we're back to where you are.
On June 23rd, 2021, Hoppus confirmed that he had been diagnosed with a rare form of cancer and had been receiving treatment in secret for the last 3 months. After his cancer diagnosis, it was reported by sources that Hoppus had met with DeLong and Barker together at his home to discuss old problems, personal issues, and Hoppus's cancer diagnosis. Hoppus was declared cancer-free later that year, but would continue screening every 6 months, as a wise person should. This is a fun list. The band have claimed punk rock group The Descendants to be their greatest influence on a number of occasions. They've also named the Beatles, which, I'm sorry, if you say your influence is the Beatles, you may as well just say your influence is music. Like,
You hate the Beatles, though.
No, but I'm saying, like, in no way can you discernibly identify the Beatles as an influence on this group. Like, that's like saying, like, okay, what influences you? Like, I don't know, other music. It's just like, you know what I mean? If there's just no discernible elements of that in it.
I mean, they had a lot of, what's the term? Exploratory? No. The psychedelic stuff towards the end was interesting, and then there's pop. And
other bands include the Ramones, the Beach Boys, the Cure, Depeche Mode, U2, Stiff Little Fingers, All, Dinosaur Jr., NoFX, or Nofix, as some people call it, Bad Religion, Refuse, Fugazi, Screeching Weasel, The Vandals, The Queers, and Jimmy World as inspirations.
Which is weird, because Jimmy World's their contemporary. Dinosaur Jr. is their contemporary.
But you can still be inspired by other groups that you enjoy listening to, you know?
I guess so.
Bands such as Panic at the Disco, and All Time Low originated covering Blink-182 songs, while You, Me at Six, and 5 Seconds of Summer have also named the band as influences. Anyone of our genre would be lying if they said they weren't influenced by Blink-182, said Joel Madden of Good Charlotte. The band's influence extends beyond punk and pop punk groups as well. The band has been cited as an influence by Avril Lavigne, Best Coast, D.I.I.V.
Why do you have to go make things so complicated?
Fiddler, Grimes, Male Bonding, Neck Deep, Mumford & Sons, I recognize them. A Day to Remember, Owl City, Charlie Bliss, Tucker Bithard, Joyce Manor, Waves, Taylor Swift.
Aha. Uh-huh,
and the Chainsmokers. The latter even mentioned the band in the lyrics of their number one hit song, Closer. And a couple of other fun facts. In 2019, Blink-182 song All the Small Things became the theme song of the Colorado Avalanche. Someone please explain that to me. And lastly, Brooks Wackerman, Bad Religion drummer from 2001 to 2015, played drums on their 1999 and 2013 tours.
I'd also like to point out, it says here, Scott Heisel of the Alternative Press in 2009 wrote that Blink-182 might well be contemporary punk's version of the Beatles.
I don't get it. I just don't. I cannot see the connection.
Maybe they're just as bland and uninteresting to you.
I guess. All right. So we have a BuzzFeed. Well, it's not really a quiz. It's a, can you make it through this Blink-182 sing-along? I think Brandon will do well with this. So we're doing it together.
Okay.
So basically you get to choose the lyric, and then on the next one, choose the next lyric, if that makes sense.
I'm confused.
What do you mean? So more questions will appear as you click the answers.
Oh, so I have to keep.
So like we have to say what the next line is.
Oh, okay.
So the first one is, they give us this, all the small things. I hope those aren't his real teeth.
No.
And then.
So the song is all the small things. Yep. The line is.
So there's three possible lines. So
yes,
I'll do the first one. So we can say the next line, or the line is, say it ain't so, I will not go. Say it ain't so, tell me where to go. Sorry, tell me when to go. Or say it ain't so, I don't want to know. I think it's the first one.
It is the first one.
Hey, I got the first and only one right that I will get right.
And then it goes, turn the lights off, and you can either answer, leave me here alone, hang up the phone, or carry me home.
I think it's Carry Me Home.
It is Carry Me Home.
Hey, I am a fan. This is their one song I actually kind of know. Keep your head still, my little windmill, I'll be your thrill, or you know I never will. Now I'm lost.
Well, two of them are actually lyrics in the song, but the next one is, keep your head still, I'll be your thrill.
Okay.
And then we have, the night will go on, is it, but we never will, my little windmill, or, and will be for real. Just gave you the answer to the last question, Andrew.
Windmill?
It is windmill.
Okay, I was gonna say, it's a very odd example if they don't ever use the word windmill in the song.
The night will go on, my little windmill.
That's horrible. The next one says, damn it,
that's the song.
And you have three choices: it's all right to tell me, it's all right to hate me, or it's all right to see me.
It's all right to tell me, and then there's no next line.
So
what you hate about me, how you feel about me, or what you think about me?
Is it what you hate about me?
I believe so. It's all
right. I don't know.
It's all right to tell me what you hate. Yeah.
You need more Blink in your life. I did not like that answer.
Oh, it's what you think about me.
Oops. All right. Retry last question. I won't try to argue. Is it or ever forget this? Or ever make you or make you regret this, or hold it against you?
You don't know the song, do you? You heard it one time on Loveline?
I think it's Hold It Against You, isn't it?
It is Hold It Against You.
I don't like the song, but I do remember it a little bit.
I know that you're leaving, and is it, but don't I mean anything? You must have your reasons. It must be the season.
The second one, you must have your reasons.
Yep.
Hey, the season is calling. When I move, I'm flailing now, and your pictures are falling down, or when he's gone, I won't come back.
Ooh. I think it's the second one. All three of these are actual lyrics in the song. Let me do this at the top. It's all right to tell me what you think about me. I won't try to argue or hold it against you. I know that you're leaving. You must have your reasons. The season is calling. Your pictures are falling down.
Hey, there you go.
And it's happened once again. The next song is What's My Age Again? And the starting lyric can be, I took her out, it was a Wednesday night. I took her out, it was a starry night. Or I took her out, it was a Friday night.
Pretty sure it's Friday night, isn't it?
Yes.
I wore cologne to get the feeling right, to try and score tonight, and even wore a tie. I think it's to get the feeling right.
Yep. We started arguing, telling jokes, or making out.
Making out?
Yep.
And she, options are, took off my pants, grabbed my dong, or took off her shirt. I don't think it's the second one.
No. Oh, she took off my pants, yes. But then I puked all on her feet, had to take a pee, or turned on the TV.
Turned on the TV.
And that's about the time she walked away from me. I like the second line, or the second verse, because that line would have been, the state looks down on sodomy.
They do, though. They do.
Yes. Next one is, I miss you. Is it, hello there, the angel from my nightmare? Or is it, hello there, the angel from above me? Or is it, goodbye now, the angel who's beneath me?
I see they fully leaned into the Beatles look on this image.
That's fair. It's supposed to be like a creepy goth music video. Seeing as they keep putting the first lyric of the song first, it's the first one. The shadow in
the background of my mind. Yeah, it's that, isn't it?
No.
Oh, shadow in the background of my mind, the corner of my room, or the background of the morgue.
It's the morgue. But you're close.
Close.
The unsuspecting victim of sunset in the valley, of darkness in the valley, of shadows creeping wildly.
Not a clue.
It's darkness in the valley. We can live like Jack and Sally if we want, where you can always find me. And we'll have Halloween on Christmas, breakfast for our dinners, or wait, Halloween.
Which one was right?
Jack and Sally.
All right. You can always find me. Yeah. And we'll have Halloween on Christmas. We'll have breakfast for our dinners, or, and we'll have Halloween all year. Don't know.
It's Halloween on Christmas. And in the night, we'll be more than just good friends, more than just good friends. Wish this never ends. We'll wish this never ends. Live together until the end. Together until the end.
Friends?
Ends. Or wish this never ends. We'll wish this never ends.
Oh, it keeps going. Oh, I bet.
The next one is Adam's song. Trigger warning, KMSing. We just start with, I never thought I'd die alone.
I never thought I'd make this call. I never thought I'd feel so alone.
And it's the first one because they've not changed it.
Oh, I laughed the loudest on the phone in our home. Who'd have known? On the phone.
Who'd have known?
Okay.
I traced the cord back to the wall. I never thought this would come so far. No wonder it was never plugged in at all. Or please tell my mom this is not her fault.
I feel like it's the mom one.
That is a lyric in the song, but it's no wonder it was never plugged in at all.
Oh.
Next song is The Rock Show, which for the first time doesn't have the first answer be the start of the song. So we have hanging out at the park after school ends, hanging out after dark with my good friends, or hanging out behind the club on the weekend.
You have to take this one.
Hanging out behind the club on the weekend, acting stupid.
Getting drunk with my best friends, telling joke with my good friends, or getting wasted with my close friends.
You could tell they're running out of steam at this point.
I am too. The first one?
Yeah. I couldn't wait for the summer, the good life, the rock show, and the Warped Tour.
Is it not the good life?
No, it's and the Warped Tour. I always thought it was at the Warped Tour.
But okay. I remember it's the first time that I saw her there. That's the place with what? That's with the place
met her.
With met her. The first time that we met was there. First time I saw her there, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Next up is First Date.
Oh boy.
Which goes back to In the Car, I Just Can't Wait, In the Car on Our Very First Date, In the Car Before I Picked You Up. It starts with In the Car, I Just Can't Wait
to pick you up and show you around town on our way to the mall or on our very first date. On our very first date, I guess. It rhymes.
Is it cool if I hold your hand?
Wait.
Ask you to dance, kiss you on the neck. Yes, it's
great. I don't know which of these would be right.
If I hold your hand. Is it wrong if I didn't know how to dance? If I think it's lame to dance? If I've never liked to dance?
Is it never liked to dance?
I think it's if I don't know how to dance.
Oh, no.
Don't wait. This night's almost over.
If I think it's lame to dance. Okay.
No, it's the first. It's the first one.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
I clicked it. Oh. It's not. But then again, these people could be wrong.
Retry also, last question.
When they said, is it cool if I hold your hand? Did it just go into the Beatles song, I Want to Hold Your Hand?
Yes. Oh, I thought we were done because it gave me super fan. Do you like the way I've dressed? Do you like my stupid hair? Do you like the way I smell? It's the hair one.
Would you guess that I didn't know what to wear, that I've never done this before, or that this is my first time? First time?
What? Would you guess that I didn't know what to wear?
Oh. I'm too scared of what you think, of saying the wrong thing, of what tonight holds.
Of what you think?
Jesus, it goes on forever.
No, this is the last one. You make me nervous, so I really can't think, I really can't speak, or I really can't eat.
I really can't think.
It's eat.
Wow.
Let's go. Don't wait. This night's almost over.
Blink 182 superfan, which means you are a Blink 182 superfan, and I don't know anything.
Yeah, I only got one. Well, you did better than I expected for not liking Blink 182.
I mean, at the end of the day, it was good for me to do this and learn more about a band that is admittedly quite popular that I don't love, but can't deny their contributions to the pop punk scene in the 90s and early 2000s.
That's mighty big of you to admit that.
Well, I'm 35 tomorrow, so now I'm 35, so you know, I'm maturing just like the music of Blink 182. I think it's time we broke up.
Are you going to go form another podcast and then we'll come back in a few years and do the same podcast?
Absolutely.
Just a little bit more mature.
And still hate each other and bicker back and forth endlessly.
All right. Well, anything left for our hour long discussion on Blink 182?
No, I'm tired, man.
All right.
That's more than I usually talk.
That's it for this week's deep dive edition of Namely 90s. Remember, you can find new episodes out every Monday. Join us next week for a variety show episode and tell us what you want us to talk about on future deep dives on Instagram and YouTube at Namely 90s with 90s. And tell us what you just said that. If you'd like to support the show, please check out our Patreon at patreon.com/namely90s, also with a 90s. And finally, you can contact us through our website, namely90s.com. Oh, actually, next week is not a variety show episode. Next week is our Halloween special.
Oh, yeah.
A podcast of horror.
Four. That's ours.
Well, that's right. Yeah. Please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Audible, Boxcar Racer, Angels and Airwaves, Plus 44, Deezer, TuneIn, iHeart, Good Pods, and wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Brandon. That's Andrew. And we'll catch you, Blink 182.
Really, the Aquabats?